Hari Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavaditamastu Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Text 6, 15-17. Thus practicing constant control of the body, mind, and activities, the mystic transcendentalist, his mind, regulated, attains to the kingdom of God, or one becomes a yogi, or by cessation of material existence. Okay. There's no possibility of one's becoming a yogi or Arjuna. One eats too much or eats too little, sleeps too much or does not sleep enough. He who has regulated his habits of eating, sleeping, recreation, and work can mitigate all material pains by practicing the yoga system. So recreation is also, we see here, mentioned. So that doesn't necessarily mean, you know, frivolous sports. It means that's what you find relaxing. You know, something that's, different from others. Like, basically it would mean the engagement in the 64 arts, you know, which is the cultural aspects. So, you know, pleasant conversation or various things connected with aesthetics or fine arts or, you know, anything along this line that's going to be a distraction from occupation, right? Because sadhana, generally speaking, doesn't give you any difficulty. But if the austerity is very great, there needs to be something that takes the mind away from that. Family life also can be pleasant, but also be stressful. Occupations can be stressful. So then the arts are there because they're a basis of interaction, human interaction. So then there's some common ground for people to interact on a relaxed way that's not connected with the sadhana, the family life, or their occupation. But it's something that takes one outside of that. But it means it's a balance. If there's too much of it, then it becomes a distraction because it only is there so that there's relaxed, so we can focus on our sadhana, our family life, and our occupation. Does this make sense? Such control is attained automatically by devotional service. Extravagance in the matter of eating, sleeping, defending, and mating, which are demands of the body, can block advancement in the path of yoga. Right? So extravagance, it's not saying that eating, sleeping, defending, and mating are going to block the path, because that was already covered in the previous verse. Right? The Grihastha Brahmachari, because he's controlled and he's regulated, then he doesn't have any problem advancing. While in the other yoga systems, there would be no possibility. Right? There's absolutely no possibility of a jnani or an astanga yogi advancing if they're a grihastha. Right? You know, so next time you bump into some person who claims to be yogi or jnani, and they're, you know, not celibate, and they're giving you trouble, then you just point out this verse. Right? Because only devotional service is actually powerful enough to be able to deal with this. But, as Krishna points out, it's only when it's extravagant. If it's controlled, if it's regulated, then there'll be no problem. But if it's not, then it will block advancement. Because block means it's not the activity that's the problem. It's our distraction by the activity. You understand? So, That's what's important to note. Right? It's how much you're distracted. The person is not much of a cook. He goes into the kitchen, and in a short time, you know, he's put his toast into the toaster, and he's, you know, opened the can of beans and put it in the microwave. You know, so within 5 minutes, he's eating. Right? So, but anything more than that for him would be extravagant. Right? But then someone else, he's a very nice cook. He goes in the kitchen, spends, you know, 20 minutes, 45 minutes, cook something very excellent, and then he's done. Now, if he spent more than that, that would be extravagant. So we have to understand, according to the conditioned nature, that defines as extravagant. Not that what we would consider extravagant for our nature is necessarily extravagant for another. Right? Because for the other, if he didn't cook nicely, he'd be disturbed. And the other one, if he had to cook nicely, he'd be disturbed. Or if one is infatuated with cooking, so all he spends all day is cooking, then, you know, where's going to be the other aspects of the sadhana? Is he remembering Krishna? Now, if he's remembering Krishna, then it's not extravagant. So extravagant basically means that there's over-endeavor in the area, and there's not necessarily a focus on Krishna. Or that it takes up time that would be naturally used by that particular conditioned nature in other valuable pursuits. As far as eating is concerned, it can be regulated only when one is practiced to take and accept prasadam, sanctified food. In this way, a person in Krishna consciousness becomes automatically trained not to accept food not meant for human consumption or not in the category of goodness. Right? So the yogi, he has to be very careful. It has to be in goodness, right? It has to be all these different things, restrictions. But if it's prasadam, it's automatic. Because Krishna doesn't eat anything that you're not supposed to eat. Does that make sense? So devotional service automatically takes care. It's very important we understand this word automatically, because some unscrupulous scholar will try to say, no, it's not automatic. There has to be endeavor. But Prabhupada is saying, here, when one is practiced, that means endeavor. The point is when you're following the devotional practice, automatically you get the good results. Right? But the others want to say, no, only when you do practice specifically the way they say it should be done. And generally speaking, it's not the way Prabhupada mentioned. Then they'll get upset with the word automatic. Because in their mind it means you just sit back and it just happens. So they'll say this is childish. Or no, you have to be very specific in your detail of exactly how you're practicing. Then only you'll get. Yes.
Is that because they're generally materialistic?
Is it because they're generally materialistic?
That every detail has to be so and so specifically?
It just means that one is basically slightly enamored by that, whatever the degree. And we're talking the principle here. We're not getting into detail because someone may be more advanced than us, but still their conditioning there is a certain aspect to them that stands out. You know, we'll have so much and in such great volume, but they may have less and very specific. But still, it doesn't matter. It's still a disturbance. Right? Does that make sense? So here Prabhupada uses automatically because the point is you please Krishna, you get the results. You don't please Krishna, you don't get the results. So it's quite simple like that. So that's why the devotional process automatically includes all the other endeavors from the other yoga systems. Because the yoga system is meant to connect to the Supreme, you connect to Krishna, then it's automatic. His being pleased means you're pleased. Just like if you pour water on the root of the plant, automatically the leaves are satisfied. Right? But that automatic meant you made an endeavor, but the endeavor was not in the direction of where the result is coming, but in where the endeavor is supposed to be made. Just like you put food into your mouth, your hunger goes away. You're not actually making your hunger go away. You're sitting there going, hunger, be gone. You know, like that. No, it goes away automatically. Does that make sense? You lay down at night, close your eyes, and then you wake up in the morning and you're rested. It's automatic. You didn't sit there all night going, rest. rest. You know, you understand? So the difficulty is we actually have this illusion that we are the controller and we are the doer. So therefore, some will get upset with this word automatically. Right? Yes. Yeah, automatically. But if your consciousness is not good, then it means the process will be slower. Means here a good category of goodness, because you're choosing from foodstuffs or in goodness. So the, you know, the grains, the beans, the vegetables, the milk, dairy products, sugar. These things, fruits, these are a mode of goodness. So they're being prepared in a clean environment without a desire for the means results for yourself. You're cooking it for Krishna. So you offer it to Krishna, you take the prasad. You know what I'm saying? So it's automatic that there'll be advancement. But in these other paths, unless it's completely, how you say, you know, why would you eat those things? Only because it's a rule. Not necessarily have a taste for it, but here you're doing it for a person, that makes it so much easier. If you have to do something because you have to, that's hard. If you're doing something because it pleases somebody you want to please, it's very easy. So that's why the devotional process is so much superior to the other processes of yoga. Because the other processes depend upon simply your sheer determination. And there's no real support for that determination other than whatever particular result you see that you're going to get for yourself, that you see that particular result is of value. Right? But you don't actually get the result till you get there. But when Krishna is pleased, you get the result automatically. Right? Even before you've gotten there. I'm saying, you're cooking, maybe you're not an excellent cook, your practice is not so great, but Krishna being pleased with the endeavor, you're already getting the spiritual benefit. Right, you may not be getting the glorification for being a great cook, but you know you're getting the spiritual benefit. But because it's for Krishna, then you'll keep practicing, and then you'll get good. But otherwise, the other way it may goes doesn't go well. Then people don't appreciate. Then you may not continue to cook because you don't see the benefit. You know what I'm saying? That's sort of dumb. As far as sleeping is concerned, a Krishna-conscious person is always alert in the discharge of his duties in Krishna consciousness. And therefore, any unnecessary time spent sleeping is considered a great loss. So any unnecessary time. So someone can sleep 4 hours. He sleeps four. He doesn't sleep more. Someone needs to sleep six. He sleeps less. Someone needs to sleep eight. He sleeps that. But he doesn't sleep more because he's conscious. It says he's always alert in the discharge of his duty. Right? So alert means that he sees that if it's necessary, he rests. If it's not necessary, he doesn't. He engages in service, right? To engage in the service, if one requires rest, he does that. If it's not required, then he doesn't do that. Does that make sense? Right? So we see all of this self-realization means you have to be conscious of yourself. It's not a matter of, oh, see here, you know, it says, yeah, I can sleep more if I need. No, that's not the point. The point is you have your service, and that service has to be done properly. So if you need to rest to do that, you do that. Like Bhugarbha Goswami didn't bother with sleeping, right? Of course, it made, you know, for, you know, very large round eyes, because he was always, you know, like that. So he was known for having like the, you know, big eyes. But other than that, then that means 24 hours he was engaged. So he didn't require the sleeping, right? And then he wasn't worried about his social status, so he wasn't worried if people, you know, hey, eyes are here, you know, like that. So he didn't worry about that. Right? You know, the Goswamis would sleep 1.5 hours a day, if they remembered. Right? Like that. So the standard is 6 if everything's proper. In other words, if piety is correct, right, health is good, so therefore health is good, 6 hours is standard. Right? But some get by, I heard Napoleon slept 2 hours a day. Like that. So it means you have a variety. Whatever works. The point is you're conscious of your duties. Right? That's what it means. We see as we get older, We don't sleep as good. Why? Because we're getting more conscious of our duties. When we were younger, we slept so well because there was nothing to do. So it wasn't we needed it. We just, you know, the mode of ignorance, you know, afforded, you know, good rest. Yeah. Okay, does that make sense? So it's a matter of each individual has to work it out. If one's not mature enough, then those who are one senior, they'll help you work it out. And if you have a temple commander, he'll definitely work it out for you. As far as work is concerned, a Krishna conscious person does not do anything which is not connected with Krishna's interest, and thus his work is always regulated and is untainted by sense gratification. Right, so here is work is here is including whether it's service to the deities or from, according to the Pancharatrik system, or it's your occupation according to the Vedic system. Right? So just work, whatever you're doing. But since you're doing it just for Krishna, and the result is for Krishna, then it doesn't, it's not a problem. So it's regulated, so it's not sense gratification, it's not a problem. Right? Again, we see, the point is it's connected to Krishna, that's what makes it perfect. Because it's connected to Krishna, that's what makes it automatic. Mm. Right? The results are automatic. Since there's no question of sense gratification, there's no material leisure for a person in Krishna consciousness. Right? So it's no material leisure. There can be spiritual leisure. You can sit, read, sit and talk with devotees, you know, go for a walk, different things. But the remembrance of Krishna is there. Right? Material leisure means there's no connection to Krishna. And because he is regulated in all his work, speech, sleep, wakefulness, and all other bodily activities, there is no material misery for him. Right? So now we see in the aspect of no question of sense gratification, right? Because that's been brought up a few times. That means it's taken care of making also. The point is it's connected to Krishna, therefore it's dealt with. Right? Okay. 6:18. When the yogi, by practice of yoga, disciplines his mental activities and becomes situated in transcendence, devoid of all material desires, he is said to be well established in yoga. The devotee automatically attains the highest stage of yoga. The activities of the yogi are distinguished from those of an ordinary person by his characteristic cessation from all kinds of material desires, of which sex is the chief. A perfect yogi is so well disciplined in the activities of the mind that he can no longer be disturbed by any kind of material desire. This perfectional stage can automatically be attained by persons in Krishna consciousness. Right? So again, Prabhupada saying this, mentioning this automatically. So you see, this the yogi, because he's not engaged in anything connected with material desire, that doesn't mean he's not performing activities that we would consider, you know, the activity itself would be categorized as ordinary. Ordinary means it's just a common activity. But the point is material means when that common activity is used for oneself, for sense gratification. When that common activity is used for Krishna, it's devotional service. So therefore, all activities being used for Krishna, one's automatically situated in yoga. Right? Does that make sense? So it's such a simple process. All the other yoga systems are meant to obtain this, right? But it's very difficult because the personal aspect is not there. Right? Does that make sense? Yes?
Yes, Maharaj. Can you develop about recreation?
About recreation.
How can recreation be used for Krishna pleasure?
It just means recreation means how you relax. Right? Means what you consider something, like let's say you've been busy all day, what you would consider would be something to relax, to just a change of pace from the other things. So for some people, just sitting down and chanting their japa, or listening to music, or reading, right? Or going for a walk, or, you know, doing some other activity, like to cook, or, you know what I'm saying? So it's a recreation. That's what we're saying. It's generally, recreation means it's within the 64 arts. Because the 64 arts also include, you know, animal husbandry, meteorology, anything like this. It's any of the arts and sciences. Because they're not the direct ones that they're not the ones that you're using as an occupation. Right? As an occupation, then there's a focus on a responsibility there. If it's not your occupation, there can be the same knowledge, same, you know, practice, but it's a relaxation for you because there's no responsibility. Yes. Does that make sense? But we're using it for Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why it said there's no material leisure for a person in Krishna consciousness. So material means it's not connected to the Lord. Right? Does that make sense? Because the point is whatever you take music. If someone sits, he plays music. So the playing of the music, the point is music is learned, used to bring out the moods of Radha and Krishna when they in their interaction. Right? That's what the ragas bring out, is that what is the season? What is the mood? What is the time of the day? And so therefore the expression comes out using those flavors. So raga is simply that expression in musical form. Does that make sense? So if that's an occupation, then you have to do, you have to practice, you have to be good at it. So there'll be some pressure. Yes. Right? But if it's a recreation, then you're simply doing same thing. You understand its connection to Krishna, but there's no. So if you have time, you play. If you don't have time, you don't. You know what I'm saying? So it's a relaxation. Does that make sense? You know, the person's a cook in the temple, therefore he's cooking, he has everything on time, this, making the orders, the menus, the volumes, all this. But if he's cooking just for fun, he wants to cook something, invite some of his friends over, has lunch, and it's a relaxation. You know what I'm saying? And much of the time, if you're very expert at an art, it could be both. You know, you see, so like Jamuna, you know, Mataji said, her cooking is also her recreation. You know what I'm saying? So it's her occupation, it's her preaching, it's her leisure, because it's, your one is so good at it. So it can function all that. But the point is whatever the position of an activity, if it's connected to Krishna, then it becomes perfect. And if it's not connected to Krishna, then even though it may be proper yoga practice, it's not very strongly situated, because the advancement gained from it will be very minimal. But if it's connected to Krishna, even if it doesn't appear to be, you know, greatly austere, it's still, one makes advancement. That's the beauty of Krishna consciousness. But yes.
So that's why it says that it's better to do one's own duty falsely than another man's duty.
Yes, I mean, because if you're doing your own duty, you're addressing your own nature. That means there is there can be the element of naishkarmya. If you're doing someone else's duty and it's not an emergency, then why would you be doing it other than there's a motive? So how will it be of good quality for Krishna? So you can say, no, we can do anything like that. Yes, technically the soul can. But that's the soul who understands he's liberated. Mm,
yes.
Who acts as such, because he's only acting, you know, according to Krishna. And then what nature is there? You know what I'm saying? You can, like we say, you can, you know, prepare the cauliflower for lunch by using a 5-pound sledgehammer. You know, one or two good smacks, maybe three. I would say three, because it'll jump around a bit.
Yeah.
But three smacks, and it is in small pieces, maybe a bit flat, but, you know, but it's ready. So you could say, no, you know, why we're restricted? Why do we have to use a knife, you know? I feel like using a sledgehammer, you know, like that. You know, so therefore, you know, why you're discriminating? You know, we're not this knife, you know. But we're not the knife, but we're the sledgehammer.
Mm.
You understand? So this is the problem, is that we don't understand is that the liberated person still acts according to what the nature is. Arjuna is liberated. But what's Krishna's complaint? Is that your nature is that of a Kshatriya. You've taken up the duty of a Brahmin. As a liberated soul, technically could. But because the nature of being a Kshatriya, he's going to go in the forest and fight and protect and do all the things he would do. So he's saying he's giving up his Kshatriya nature, but he's not. No one can give up their nature. It's an illusion to say you can give up your nature. You can purify your nature. You can engage your nature in Krishna's service. There's no question of giving it up. Does that make sense? So that's the point, is that it doesn't change like that. So only someone who doesn't actually understand the philosophy will say that. Right? So now if you do something that's not your nature, right, and it's not, as I said, an emergency that is needed, that you'll do it for a short time until someone else can do it, then there's a motive for doing it, because you, the benefit you get from someone else's duty, you want for yourself. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, why would you do it? No one's going to do anything unless they see a benefit to it. Does that make sense? As we said before, when we talk about rights, people are only fighting over rights over something that gives a benefit. No one's fighting over who can take out the garbage, you know, or who can drive the, you know, the pickup truck down to the local Kmart and get the, you know, the expired, vegetables and milk products that are still okay, but, you know, that they can't sell, and loading them into the truck yourself and bringing them back to the temple. No one's fighting over that. No, we're, you know, we're not this fight. Everybody can do it. No, there's no fight over that. You understand? So there's a motive. So that's why Krishna says one should stick to one's duties. Because in one's duties, one will do them nicely for Krishna without attachment. And two, that's where your expertise will be. Mm-hmm. It's so much more powerful. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? A child gets things done by being an adult or being a child.
By being a child.
You understand? The adult gets things done by being an adult, not a child. Right?
If you're doing someone else's duty, you would probably also keep skipping through different...
Yeah, then the thing is then you'll pick and choose according to what at the time you want to do. So therefore, you know, as I said, we want the authority of the Brahminical status and being on the top of the pile. We can tell anyone at any time, anywhere, what to do. We want the absolute, you know, dictatorial control of the Kshatriyas like that. At the same time, depending upon what year is, the idea that, well, hey, they can do anything and, you know, like that, they have that, you know, if any woman approaches you, this, that, blah, like that. They want the monetary freedom of the Vaishya, and that you can do anything pragmatically to get anything done. And at the same time, the lack of a responsibility of the Shudra on the emotional platform, that whatever you feel like, then that's good to go, right? You know, at the same time as we want no responsibility like a brahmachari, we want full of access to sense gratification and facility, the grihastha. We want that kind of maturity, but access that the vanaprastha has, and then the authority and the independence of the that the sannyasi has, right?
Now please.
Right? Does that sound right? Yeah, okay, yeah, good. Yeah. So that's what we're looking for. So Krishna, the point is if we do that, what's the meaning of having the division? That means no one will do something very well. If everybody's cooking and everybody's decorating for the deities and everybody's, you know, leading the kirtan and everybody's, you know, greeting the guests, how will it work? No, somebody's cooking, someone's greeting the guests, someone's doing the kirtan, someone's doing the puja. Then it works out nicely. So that's the point, is in Krishna's mind, it's not a problem, because we make it a problem because we see it. We see the system as separate from Krishna. If we're arguing over rights, it means we don't see what we're doing connected to Krishna. Right? But the brahmachari are the feet of the Lord. Right? The vaishyas are the waist. The kshatriyas are the arms. The brahmins the head. Right? Same. Shudras are the feet. Right? Because Krishna moves around. So what moves the society around? The shudras. Right? Without the shudras, it doesn't happen. Vaishyas have great ideas. Kshatriyas have great ideas. But it happens because shudras do it. Right? The shudras wouldn't be able to do it on their own. They wouldn't have to understand what to do. That's why they need leadership. But without the activities, then it won't happen. Napoleon didn't win the war on his own. He sat there and said, yes, we're going to do this. And then it just happened. No, a lot of people got out there and did it. Does that make sense? So that's the point. It's part of the body of the Lord. So the body, the Lord doesn't make that much distinction. He goes, yeah, my hand's great, but, you know, my feet, I don't. I never like my feet, you know. He doesn't think like that. We think like that because we're thinking of prestige. As we mentioned before, the only reason, ashram is basically, to some degree, established in our society. Varna is not. Why not? Because it's a social system. Prabhupada says, varna is social, ashram is spiritual. So we can accept that because it's the element of, we can say, well, it's all transcendental, though we may not act in that way. But because the other is social, no one wants to be the Shudra. That's the only reason, bottom line, why Varnashram is not understood and applied in our movement. Because it means somebody's a Shudra. You know, and if you're the Vaishya, you got all the money, you're still not in control. Because you won't have it. I got money, I walk in, whatever I see, everybody does, because money, you know, trumps everything. No, it doesn't. And then the manager will want to say, no, you know, because I'm in control of everything, therefore now I'm the top of the pile, and everybody's got to give me all their money and do all the work for me. But it's still not. The Brahmins are the top of the pile. You know, the guy that has the brains, he's got his nose in the books, you know, and that we think is not practical. You know? So why he should be the top? And we got the money and we got the power. You know, so why he should be the top? And in his mind, he's not the top, because then about it, the Shastras, the previous Acharyas. So it goes back to Krishna. But we have problem with it because we're looking at it from the mundane point of view. And I emphasize the word mundane. Otherwise, who cares if one's a Shudra? It's the Lord's feet. Is that a problem? First two cantos of Bhagavatam are compared to the feet. You know? You understand? So this is the problem. We're looking at it from mundane social vision. Otherwise, it doesn't matter. Yes?
This is the biggest loss.
Means the point is everyone's nature has something that they're expert at.
Yeah.
You cultivate it, you will become expert comes by practice.
Yeah, but in some particular area, yeah?
Well, there's a particular area, it doesn't mean that one doesn't know many. Just like we mentioned the 64 arts, when we're talking about that, then those who are the very aristocratic persons, they may know all 64. Others may know only a few, but we see Krishna knows the 64 arts, Radharani knows the 64 arts. So that means that the most qualified, right? So they have a broad range, because 64 arts covers everything. In other words, you have the Shastra of what is the science of the thing, the main functioning areas. The arts, the 64 arts, are the arts that support that. Just like, let's say you want to make a medicine in Ayurveda. But there's an art to growing the herb, or to picking it, or to grinding it, or preparing it. There's arts there, you know, like that. But it's based on a science, right? Does that make sense? So the arts are all the activities that are supportive of all the other scientific activities given in the Vedas, which are in support of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Does that make sense? So the standard thing is there. So one may have a broad range of activities one is good at, but there should be something occupationally that you are able to add to the, you know, community of devotees. Like that. Does that make sense? But it may be an art, it may be an occupation. You know what I'm saying? Like we were saying before, is in the kirtan, Madhava Prabhu, he has a job he works at in Switzerland, but he comes and does kirtan. Right? You understand? So that's what he adds to the community of devotees. The other is the occupation, so he can take care of himself, so he can come and do that. You know what I'm saying? But it's something you can add. You know, and if you can't add anything specific that you're not very expert, then if you can follow someone who does know what to do, and do that nicely, then that's also the great advantage. But what's not an advantage is there's nothing that you can specifically do, and there's nothing that you want to do, and you're not about to listen to anybody tell you what you could do. That's basically useless. Yes?
Is there any practice for someone who kind of in Krishna consciousness?
Kind of in Krishna consciousness.
Yeah, but you know, because my occupation is to help people to figure out what is their
occupation. Well, that's an interesting occupation.
Myself, very new to Krishna consciousness, you know, so early on I teach them like materialistic way, but now when I do everything for Krishna, I just, you know, I see the results, different results, like you said. But is there some like proper practice for them that I can teach them to figure out their occupation? If I will bring Krishna consciousness to them,
Yeah, of course.
Because I already have this audience and I want to do something.
Yeah.
So can you suggest some like practice for someone to find out his occupation, you know, because it's such a big like, you know, question for them.
Yeah, yeah, of course. Let us take a non-devotee, okay? Disgustingly gross material. Okay? He wants to boil some potatoes. What does he do?
Find a cookbook or something, go to YouTube and find the video.
Okay, that's the thing. But the practical thing means, in other words, you don't know much about cooking. Okay. So, basically speaking, you take the potatoes, put them in a pot that has water in it, put it on a fire, and when it boils for like about 20 minutes, the potatoes get soft. Okay? Now, let us take, you know, a great, pure, unalloyed devotee. Okay? You know, so we can cover all extremes here. How will they boil the potatoes?
They do it for Krishna?
Yeah, but the mechanics, are there any difference?
No.
Because you're a devotee, now it's not that you have to put so much water, or you don't have to worry if you put enough, or you don't have to put it on the fire, you don't even have to put it in a pot.
Okay.
You understand? The mechanics are exactly the same. So in other words, the science of figuring out someone's occupation doesn't change because you're Krishna conscious. The point is, where does that nature come from? It comes from God. What is it supposed to be used for? To please the Lord. That's what changes. Okay? So your occupation doesn't change. It's that your consciousness is higher, so you're able to see that this nature is there because it fits into the greater picture of God's social system.
Yeah, but maybe in the Vedic literature there are some ways for a person to find out from Varna, for example, what Varna is closer to, you know, maybe something.
I mean, so you have detail, and that's unlimited, but specific is, are there going to be a leadership in the intellectual that are based on academic study, on influence, on money, or on arts?
Yeah, but if one cannot choose, then
it's not a matter of choosing. It's a matter of where you're going to do. So the point is that in academic means you go to the academic school. What you learn in the academics is the occupation. You learn medicine, now you apply it. You learn law, now you apply it. Right?
Yeah,
you learn teaching, now you apply it. That's all. It's
for the most part, they just, you know, dissatisfied with everything they tried.
But that,
so they just want some, you know, some kind of...
Because they're looking at the satisfaction, not at what they can do. See, that's the problem. You're looking at the goal rather than the sambandha, the nature. What do they have? Just like, let's say, a guy who has no arms. Could he choose as an occupation doing handmade embroidery doilies, you know, for grandmothers to sit on their armchair, I mean the arms of their sofas? Could he do that? No. So there's the mechanics of what he can do, has the ability for, right? He was able to do math. He can work in those areas. He can't figure out 2 + 2 = 4. He doesn't work in any area that works that. It's mechanics. Satisfaction is because they're not God conscious. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't matter who they are, they're not satisfied. We'll think they are. You know what I'm saying? We'll think they're big and famous like that. But Michael Jackson's dead. Why? Because he couldn't sleep. Why? Because, you know, and so he had to take medication. Why can't he sleep? Everybody else can sleep. That means he's not satisfied. You understand? So, but he has his nature. Satisfaction's another thing. They're looking at the goal and I'll try anything to get it. But it's not changing the work, it's changing the mentality. So you have to figure out, separate, there's the satisfaction in work and there's what work you can do. Work out first what you can do. Then you can teach him how to be satisfied. That's where the Krishna consciousness comes in. Okay. 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 Lesson 31. One should practice equilibrium of mind so that one should not be disturbed by worldly gain or loss, right? So we see lesson 30 is to regulate the habits, right? So that one's stable. Now the next is the equilibrium of mind. The habit has been done, but that doesn't mean that the mind is satisfied. So next is regulate the mind. Practice equilibrium of the mind, right? So then one will not be disturbed by worldly gain or loss. It says worldly gain or loss. Because there's never spiritual gain or loss if you're practicing properly. Right? You know, if you lose something, like you look at Prabhupada, he's there, he's in the city, he's in that place, he has a house, he has a place, and a few people are interested, but it's not very dynamic. He leaves everything, he leaves that situation, goes to the big city. Right? You know, so he's going to New York. Right? So then he goes there. Then he finally gets some little place like that. Then he has everything stolen. So now he goes down to the other end of the not so wealthy end of New York. And it happens to be with young people, that's an advantage. But now it's like, what do you got? So he ends up living with some acid head. You know what I'm saying? And then that he loses and he's out on the street. Do you understand? So materially there's gain and loss, but spiritually there never is, because he's just working for Krishna. But because we take religion to be spiritual, there, and religion is what gives artha, that if there's gain and loss materially, we think there's something wrong with the religion, so therefore there's something wrong with the spiritual. So we become disturbed. But the point is spiritually, there's no, whether it's nice or not, it doesn't matter. Right? The family life is going nicely, so therefore everyone's cooperating and in a peaceful way going about their Krishna consciousness. The family life is not going nicely, so one is losing one's infatuation with material endeavors. So therefore, if you're smart, you turn to the spiritual and therefore advance. So what does it matter? Either one works. One's more pleasant, one's more difficult. So the point is if you can avoid it, stick to the pleasant. But even sticking to the pleasant, there's always going to be something unavoidable. You know what I'm saying? But if you have a choice, why pick the one that's going to be crazy in the first place? Right? So that's why the Vedic system is given. That's why Krishna is mentioning these things. The mind is balanced. Then there's not a disturbance by the material situations. Because material situations will always change. They're always temporary. Right? It's just the way they are. Material means it's constantly changing. And they're constant. And because we identify with it, that's the problem. Right? And identifying with it, we're identifying for our own purpose. So it's not that we're assisting the material nature. We're trying to exploit material nature for ourselves. So therefore, if you want a specific result, you have to have a specific situation in which to do a specific endeavor that gets that result. Right? You want to eat, you have to be in the kitchen with items to cook and know how the science of cooking. Then you get something. But you want to eat and then suddenly you find yourself out in a field of, marigolds. You know, it's not going to be very easy. You understand? So the constant changing of situations is a disturbance because we're not servants of material nature. We're exploiters of material nature. You understand? But on the spiritual platform, then we're servant of Krishna's potency. So that means the internal potency. So therefore, variety is created by the feminine nature. So therefore, as she adjusts and changes to make variety for Krishna's pleasure, it doesn't bother us because we're simply trying to assist in whatever is the variety that is there to please Krishna. So it doesn't matter. That's why it doesn't bother the residents of Vrindavan that, you know, they're nicely situated in the palace or they're out in the forest and there's a fire. Because it's all about assisting whoever's, that, you know, the superior aspect of the internal potency that is being performing and taking part in the pastimes to please Krishna. Does that make sense? So the variety there enhances and it doesn't bother. So therefore the gain or loss is not a problem. So we're practicing the same thing here. Because we want something from it for ourselves. Therefore, when the situation changes, the opportunity to get what we want is lost. But if the opportunity is to assist to please Krishna, it's always there at every moment, no matter what the change is. Does that make sense? So that's why it's important that we practice equilibrium of mind. It's because all these different things are so that we will be situated and always thinking of Krishna, because that's what we're trying to get at. But you have to use something to practice that. So what is that something? That's your nature. And our nature happens to be coming from conditioning. But it doesn't matter. It's a nature. And that nature is the nature of a reflection of a spiritual nature. Does that make sense? Yeah, so even we don't have to worry. In the spiritual world, there's aborigines. So, you know, we still have a spot, right? You know. So, in the spiritual world, they engage their nature in Krishna's service. That's the point. But under the protection of the internal potency. So here we engage our nature in Krishna's service under the protection of the internal potency. But when we don't work under the internal potency, then we engage our nature for our own purpose. That's the lack of Krishna consciousness. That's the science. It's so simple. That's all we're trying to do, but Krishna is from various angles trying to convince us of that, because we have a tendency to, you know, okay, well this is okay, but what about this? You know, the point is very simple, you know, that recreate leisure, you know, no material leisure. So that means that if we connect to Krishna, we can do anything? You know, it's like that. It means, but is there a specific thing? No, I'm just trying to open up possibilities. Right? Because what? Then I'll enjoy it. So that's mundane. So that's the difficulty. Is it simply it's connected to Krishna? That's all it takes. Right. Yes?
So Maharaj, when the living entity is assisting the internal potency, is automatically assisting the material, the external potency?
Means the external potency is assisting the internal. The reason that, see, the point is the change is there, that's just because in a reflection, whatever's on this, whatever's in the actual life is reflected in the mirror. So it's not that it's different. What happens in the material world is no different. Yes. Right? But in principle, you know, there's details that get down into the, you know, in other words, those elements might be there on the animal level, but they're not supposed to be in the human level. You know what I'm saying? Just like, let's say, the syphilis. It's an animal disease. It's not a human disease. Like that. You know what I'm saying? It's not supposed to be there, but it is there because people act like animals. You know what I'm saying? So, there's so many animal tendencies. You're not supposed to be eating meat and things. Animals do that. We don't need to do that. You know what I'm saying? So, those elements are established. So then, if you follow nicely, like we see the activities, you know, that Yudhishthir and them are doing, and the activities going on in Dwarka are the same, right? Because they're following the Shastra, right? This means in Dwarka, the Shastra only documents what Krishna likes to do, right? And in Indraprastha, it's what Krishna likes to do being documented in the Shastra, they're following, and therefore they're pleasing Krishna. So the activity is the same. Right? It's just a matter of whether you're coming to it from Krishna first or from the material conditioning first. Does that make sense? Right? Yeah. So it doesn't change. So it'll be automatic that if... I got so far into the example, I forgot the point we were working on.
But the internal potency.
Yes, the internal potency. So the external potency is only reflecting. So if you deal with the external potency in Krishna consciousness, you're actually dealing with the internal potency.
Yes.
Right? Just like the demons when they're in the spiritual world, right? When they walk into Vrindavan and make trouble, they're not dealing with the internal potency. Because the internal potency manifests to them as external.
Mm-hmm.
So they're in Maya, though they're in Braj. Mm-hmm. And then the Brajavasis that come here for the preaching, even though they're within the material energy interacts with them as internal potency. So they're in the spiritual world.
Mm-hmm.
Because internal and external are one person, two offices.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? So depending how you deal is how they respond. You know, the high court judge is also a family person. So if you deal with them formally, you're dealing with the judge. You deal with them informally, you're a friend of the family. But it's the same person. Does that make sense?
This means that if we learn to deal nicely with the material energy, means as a servant, in a cooperation, not as the expert, you can deal better with Krishna and his internal.
Yes, because the point is we only are dealing with the external potency.
Yes.
Yeah. Does that make sense? So we're dealing with, and through our conditioning, that's what aspect of material energy we can deal with, right?
Mm-hmm.
It means you have eyes, so you can see, so you can deal with that aspect. You don't have eyes, you don't see, so you don't deal with that aspect. So your nature is the medium through which the soul can be conscious of the Lord's energy. So that would be done through the mind and senses. So whatever is the nature of one's mind and senses, that's how one views the material energy, and that's how one can engage that energy in Krishna's service. Right? So sense, does that make sense? Yeah. So Maya herself is a dynamic personality, but she's in control. She's of this dead matter. So therefore, we don't necessarily say we're assisting the dead matter. But in the spiritual world, it's all conscious. But ultimately, even if it's conscious, we're doing that on a higher purpose. The rice grains may be conscious in the spiritual world, but we're cooking that rice because, you know, our Acharya has told us to. And that's going on because Rupa Goswami says, and that's because Radharani wants it going. You know what I'm saying? So you have those both elements at once. You're still working under that superior authority. But there's no exploitation. You know what I'm saying? So that's why it's important. The principles are what's important. The detail is according to the situation. That's why Krishna's talking here. Practice equilibrium. Practice regulation. Follow authority of the Vedas under the direction of the spiritual master in the association of devotees. It's not, the detail is not so much there. We have to accept the principles. You accept the principles, then it works. Detail will be applied according to the situation. Right? Situation changes, details change. That's why if someone's attached to a particular detail, either has to keep himself in a particular environment, right? Or understand that the material energy is always changing. So therefore, sometimes the situation is good for in one, but not in another. That's why there's a problem if people take the rules of Krishna consciousness and apply them as if they were principles. They're not. They're an application of the principle. And generally speaking, what the Shastras give are your traditional or best or most broad. Right? But still the point is you have to know the principle because there's always a situation in which it doesn't apply. Does that make sense? You know, the husband's, you know, it's how you say, controlling the environment of the family situation, okay? And the wife is assisting in that. But the point is the husband's not there, he's out doing something. The wife manages the house. So it means she, you know, what she says is what happens. She's controlling what happens, she's controlling the finances, what goes where, what's cooked. Like that. So you could say, well, actually, she's in actual control. Right? But she's doing that, you know, because of the affection for the husband. You understand? So even though externally it looks different, you know what I'm saying? But it's still the same. That's why principle is important. Right? You know, she's going to do what she wants to do. Husband's at home, he may say something, she may make some adjustment. You know what I'm saying? And even if she doesn't, you know, she says, no, this is the way it'll be done. It may look like, well, you know, she's controlling the situation and not acting within a position of submission. But the point is it's what's best. So it's out of what's best for that situation and relationship. That's why she's saying that. Does that make sense? Draupadi's making the point very strongly is that, you know, we're sitting out here in the forest because you, you know, foolishly followed this, you know, to the nth degree, this rule of the Kshatriyas accepting a challenge. But it wasn't actually a challenge we needed to accept. Duryodhana was not a proper, you know, person to accept. And he wasn't gambling himself. Shakuni was gambling. So, you know, that's not allowed. That brings it out of the realm that you have to accept. Like that. So she's making a very valid, strong point. Because the point is her point is Yudhishthira is the deserving king of the planet, and he should be the emperor, not Duryodhana. She's not grumpy because she's in the forest. You know, forests are nice. You know what I'm saying? For Kshatriyas, forests aren't a problem. You know, the nice, the nature, you know, the things like that, the saintly persons that are out there, the discussions, they have no problem with that. Vaishyas might, Shudras might, but Kshatriyas and Brahmins don't at all. Like that. Her point, problem is that, you know, being a woman, so she's religious, is why is it Duryodhana, who's irreligious, is on the throne, and Yudhishthira, who's religious, is not? That's her point. You understand? So, therefore, it makes that, oh, she's so strong, why is she talking? No, that's her business. Because you have to be able to identify. Otherwise, one can't tell. One would say, no, it has to be submissive at all times. Therefore, it's just whatever the husband says after they do and this and that. That's a servant. That's not conjugal relationship. That's master-servant relationship. Get a maid. You know? Like that. Much easier. They come, do the work, clean, go away. You know, you don't have to buy him diamonds, you know. It's much cheaper. Like that. So if you're a pragmatist, hey. But the conjugal relation is different. So that's the point, is the principle is not understood. They're taking a detail as the principle and trying to apply it at all times, so it doesn't work. You know. At the same time as the liberals on the other side do the same thing. They take a detail, well, you know, personal freedoms and this and that, and take that to the nth degree. But the point is what's the point? Personal freedom means within a relationship or not having a relationship. Because as soon as it's a relationship, freedoms are lost. You want to use the knife, can you use it however you want? I take it, throw it up in the air, it sticks to the ceiling, right? You know, but now it should cut the vegetables. No, it won't. It's stuck in the ceiling. I use the back of the knife. Will it work? No, I feel like it. Why I always have to use the front of the knife? The sharp is so dangerous. I cut my finger last time. If I use the back end of the knife, I don't cut my finger. Why do I always have to hold the handle? You know, like that. You know, live life dangerously. You know, hold the blade. You know what I'm saying? No, you're restricted. You want a relationship with a knife, you have to deal with a knife in a proper way. You know? That's all. If I use too less, you know, I just hold it there and just touch the potato with it. Anything's going to happen? No. You have to push. If I take it, you know, like this, you know, okay. Potato got cut. Okay, one's on that side of the kitchen, one's on this side of the kitchen. And you have, you know, the edge of your knife blade is a little bit curled. Like that, you know. So, in other words, that you have to act according to what you're dealing with. That's just relationship. But we say, no, independence, that's the real freedom. So that means that's Mayavad philosophy. They're Mayavadis. Liberal people are Mayavadis. Just as the conservative is a Mayavadi. Neither position is Vaishnava. So one is trying to take the Mayavad position and connect it to Krishna. Nice. But ultimately it has to be purified of its Mayavad position. Otherwise it won't be that pleasing to Krishna. That's the difficulty. Is that right? So in other words, technically speaking, we are assisting the material energy because we're only the operational cause. You know, we're just involved in, but we're not the material cause. The material nature changes on its own. We don't actually do it. Right? Lunch digested on its own. We didn't do it. Right? We can be involved in what we eat, how much we eat, when we eat, that will have an effect on the material cause. But we're not actually the ones doing it. Like that. So, and the material cause is only a reflection of the formal cause, which is the internal potency in her interaction with the Lord, the Brahman platform. Right? And that is just an assistance of the original cause, or the ultimate cause, which is Krishna's nature, Krishna's potency. Right? So in any case, we're servant. It's just a matter of whether we see material energy as separate from the Lord and try to exploit it, or we deal with the internal potency. Whether we're using the medium of external, internal, doesn't matter. The point is what we're dealing with. Does that make sense? We serve the master of the house, whether we're working in the living room of the mansion or we're out in the garage. It doesn't matter. We're still working for the master. Though the nature of the two is different. One's all, you know, very nice, and the other is a little less nice. Does that make sense? So 518. The humble sages, by virtue of true knowledge, see with equal vision a learned and gentle Brahman, a cow, an elephant, a dog, and a dog eater, outcast. You know, make it here because dog eater, because they might think, you know, a very large cat or something like that. Or one of those, what do you call it? You know, those Parisian rats, you know, in the sewers there, right? A devotee's equal vision is a result of his perfect knowledge. A Krishna conscious person does not make any distinction between species or castes, right? He doesn't make any distinctions means he sees equally them, but it doesn't mean he can't tell the difference. We'll say, oh, she makes no distinction. So that means I go into the kitchen and I pick up the rolling pin and to cut the potatoes. And I use the knife to, you know, prepare the chapatis. No, the thing is, makes no distinction means it's not that the knife is better than the rolling pin. No, the knife has its duties and the rolling pin has its. So when you're rolling something, use a rolling pin. When you're cutting something, use the knife. That's the meaning of no distinction. The Brahman and the outcast may be different from the social point of view, or a dog or a cow and an elephant may be different from the point of view of species. But these differences of body are meaningless from the viewpoint of a learned transcendentalist. Right? That one's good and one's bad. No. Elephants do their thing, outcasts do their thing, everybody has their... This is due to their relationship to the Supreme. For the Supreme Lord, by his plenary portion as Paramatma, is present in everyone's heart. So there, also on that level, everyone is a servant of Krishna. So therefore, no one is any different in that way. But how they're going to manifest that is different. And whether they're Krishna conscious or not, you know, is going to make a difference on the quality of their application. Right? But for the transcendentalist, he sees everyone as servant of Krishna. But he can tell, you know, that he's sitting in a palace, and so the king, so you follow that etiquette, or he's sitting in a, you know, a humble cottage, and so he follows the etiquette there. The bodies are material productions of different modes of material nature, but the soul and the supersoul within the body are of the same spiritual quality. The modes of the body and all that, that's different. Different karma, so different modes, so different manifestation. But the soul and the supersoul are the same, there's no difference. The similarity in the quality of the soul and supersoul, however, does not make them equal in quantity. For the individual soul is present only in that particular body, whereas the Paramatma is present in each and every body. A Krishna conscious person has full knowledge of this, and therefore he's truly learned and has equal vision. So that's where the balance is. That's the, when we're talking about equilibrium of mind, means he doesn't see one thing as better than the other, just what works best for that situation. Right? It's a festival day, so you dress nicely. You're going to do some work, you're going to clean the kitchen. You dress in something that's not as nice. Right? So it's just what works for Krishna consciousness. Right? In the living entities, we don't make the distinction that one's better than the other. No, it's whatever, according to your nature, according to the situation, according to those in the situation, then you'll preach accordingly. Right? So if you have a nature, you can deal with one particular group of persons in a particular situation, you just take advantage of that, preach in that situation. Someone else can do it another. You use that. It doesn't matter. It's all part of, it's all, the nature is created by Krishna. So it doesn't really matter what it is, because the point is the soul serves the super soul. Right? And that situation is the nature. Right? Just as in the spiritual world, the soul serves the personality of Godhead according to the nature and the situation you're in. Right? You're out in the forest at midnight, the gopis dance with Krishna. The Krishna and the gopis are in Mother Jashoda's house, they're not dancing with Krishna. They're not even making direct contact. Does that make sense? So they're transcendentalists, but they can tell the difference in the situations. So the point is that whatever the situation, they're always serving Krishna. That's the point. That doesn't change. But according to what's there, then he deals with them according to what they are. You know, you're nice to everybody according to the way they're nice, right? And the elephant, you scratch him under the leg. They like that, you know. But, you know, something else you might, you know, you wouldn't scratch the dog eater under his arm, you know, it's like that. It might be a disturbance, you know, like that. Yes?
You emphasize that we assist material nature.
No, I'm emphasizing that you're assisting Krishna's energy.
And my question is...
I'm saying we're assisting material energy anyway, but because we don't recognize it, we call that Maya. When we recognize it, then we call that Krishna consciousness. Then we're dealing with the internal potency.
I cannot understand where this principle is in the Shastras.
Where is the principle in the Shastras about the internal and external potency being the same person?
Yeah, but about that we must assist material.
We must, because you aren't catching what I said.
What?
You're not catching what I said. You're not understanding what I said. I didn't say we must assist material nature. We must assist Krishna's energy. We assist Krishna's energy in a favorable way. Then she manifests to us as internal potency. We assist Krishna's energy not favorable to Krishna. She manifests to us as external potency, as Maya. So we're not assisting the material energy. We're assisting the internal potency. But depending upon our nature and the situation, she manifests as, so we can perceive her in the spiritual world as the material world. So we're in the material world now. So we're dealing with material energy. That's why most of the time I don't use the term, but it's being used here, so we're using that. I'll use the term external potency. Then we don't get bent out of shape, right? Does that make sense? If I say internal potency, external potency, it's no problem. Material means seeing either one of them not connected to Krishna, right? Means Shankachuda is seeing material energy. He's in Gokula. It's the spiritual world. He's there with Balaram and his gopi. And he decides, you know, there's so many of them, he wants a few for himself. Right? And so he goes to collect a few of them. But what he collects is material energy. Because he's seeing it not connected to Krishna. Right? That's the point. So I'm pointing out is the gross materialist is still assisting material energy. Because he thinks I'm doing this, but he's only assisting material energy in the transformation. But the transformation is only taking place because you want it. Right? It's taking place according to God's law, but it's only happening because you want it. In the spiritual world, it's because Krishna wants it and the internal potency is fulfilling that desire. So there's no activities going on that aren't directly connected to Krishna. Here, they're indirectly connected to Krishna. Though Krishna's internal potency, that's what's making it work. The car is going down the road because of the Lord's potency. So that means the masculine and feminine principles of the ultimate cause and the formal cause are at work, reflected in the external potency. That's going on. Right? So we driving the car actually assisting in that. So when we understand this and we see this in relationship to Krishna, then our engagement of our nature becomes perfect because it's connected to Krishna, and it doesn't matter what nature it is. Does that make sense? Yes? So we're not saying we have to assist. No, we're already doing that. We have to see ourselves in service to Krishna. That's why we're trying to become servants of the internal potency, because right now we're not. You understand? Yes? No, not our nature. I said that the material nature is a reflection of the spiritual nature, not our one. It's not that whatever we are here is something to do with there. That might not be so great. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Yeah. No. The principle of that we are servants of Krishna, are servants of the servant of Krishna, that doesn't change wherever we're situated. So that's the Swarup. The Swarup, like the Swarup Lakshana of a devotee, is his, you know, absorption and totally dependence and engagement in Krishna's service. That's what doesn't change. So it doesn't matter if you're in the material world or the spiritual world, by situation, one is always serving Krishna. Right? So one who recognizes that is called a devotee. One who doesn't recognize that is called a materialist. Because he's still assisting Krishna. Krishna's still interacting with him. Just, he wants to, let's say, be famous. So Krishna, as fame, is interacting with him. So now if he deals properly with Krishna as fame, he attains fame. He doesn't deal properly with Krishna as fame, he doesn't get fame. Just like you want to be friends with somebody, you deal the way they like it, they become friends. You deal the way they don't like it, you don't become friends. So everybody is only dealing with Krishna. Right? The person wants to be powerful, but power is Krishna. So Krishna manifests to them as power. And you're interacting with power, which is Krishna. So it's still the soul is and the super soul are still interacting. But the person who thinks the dead matter, I have my kingdom, I have my influence, and my army and my treasury, and I'm very clever, so these are the reasons for my power. That's the illusion. No, it's that Krishna's power, these are all the branches of power, and you are dealing with them properly. Therefore, Krishna is reciprocating as power the way that, you know, you are happy. Does that make sense? Yeah. Means, why do you talk to a small kid in a particular way? Yeah, because then you can relate. Because they can relate. You can relate to them whether they're a little baby or they're grown up, because that's going to happen. Right? The problem is the child learning to interact. Right? Does that make sense? So, God interacts with us according to how we interact with Him. So therefore, we have material desire. He comes as that material desire. So we're already serving. But because we think we're not serving, we're master and we're controller. That's the illusion. Therefore, we're in Maya. As soon as we understand we're not the master, we're the servant, then we will act in a way that's favorable. So automatically, everything will become fine. For the, if one, by Gyan, we'll follow the same process. They'll break things down by Shankya like this and analyze, but they're simply using their own intelligence and whatever piety they have from previous to be able to break it down. So therefore it doesn't have that much drive, that dynamism. So it's not automatic. We don't say the Ashtanga yoga system, the path of karma, jnana, are automatic. You have to work, and until you get to the last point, when it's 100%, then you have it. Right? In other words, let's say you're cooking something, and it's in the pot. It's not done. So you don't have the preparation. But because you're doing it for Krishna, you're already getting, reaping the benefit of devotional service. You understand? So you already have the result of devotional service while it's not even finished. Right? But for someone who's just cooking, they don't get the result until the cooking's finished. So that's why there's a distinction between the devotional aspect and the material aspect. That's what Prabhupada mentioned it before. There's no material misery for him. You know, or the other one was, you know, the loss and gain. Not silver material. I always find it means this is one way. And I said that Krishna is not easily attainable because something you just read, when you go back to find it, you can't find it. It's not, even if it's sitting there on the same page, you can't find it. Yeah.
And I was wondering, whenever we hear that we are a servant of Krishna, we act like that. What is it that makes one revert again to the polluted consciousness?
What makes us revert again? Well, I mean, you have the element of... basically, is you're acting on that, but the point is that's why Krishna says constant. Oh, here it is. Worldly gain or loss. It was right in the lesson. Right? Means is... What is the point again?
Whenever one hears that one is...
Okay, yeah. So, one is distressed... By habit, one tends to deal with the material energy for oneself. Just by habit. You know, like Panchadevita Maharaj is riding with Prabhupada on the train. Not sure where it was, Bombay, Vrindavan, one of these legs of the train. And he's sitting with Prabhupada, you get a coupe. Unless it was four, but I think generally it was always two, Prabhupada and whoever traveled with them. So they have a coupe, two beds. You know, it's its own little cabin. So they're going by and the train starts. And as it goes, everything goes into a blur outside. But as it was going to a blur, then suddenly Panchavita noticed a very attractive young girl. Could see her clearly. And he asked Prabhupada, how is that possible? Everything else was a blur, but immediately when this girl came into view, he could see her. Prabhupada said, it's only by material association. That we've been doing it for so long. Right? That, does that make sense? You know, the men look for attractive women, women for men. That when one is there, because all the other stuff wasn't anything that was according to one's conditioning, and the principle of that attraction wasn't, therefore you didn't see it. You know what I'm saying? So it's just habit. So that's why it's practice. Sadhana is practice. One should practice equilibrium of mind. Right? The other one is, next stage is to regulate habits. It's a practice. Right? Because one will start up, but you may be good at it, but practice means you're not necessarily that good. Or there's something more to obtain. Does that make sense? So you have made advancement, but that means that there's areas that still aren't. So if there's a weakness there, that's not the problem. The problem is how to turn that aspect where the weakness is into the strength, right? So that's done by connecting it to Krishna. So if the weakness comes up, how do you view it? You know, I'm so useless, I'm so disgusting, I'm so this, I'm so that, I'm so the mode of ignorance, I am so much of this body, I am the doer because I did that nonsense, it was me. None of that's our philosophy. Right? You know, that's you know, Chinese social revenge. It's not Krishna consciousness. You know what I'm saying? But the point is we're not the body, we're the soul. So by material association, that happens. So therefore, because that's the tendency by my previous karma, Therefore, I should be very careful to regulate more strictly that area, because that area is more of a problem. Someone else it may not be a problem at all. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and so then whenever the hobbits are changed, and because they're with the mind, the hobbits are in the mind.
It means you may have to change the habit, but more important is you're purifying it, because it may be the habit itself, there's a regulation for it. The regulation may be engaging it. There may be also that it's not engaging it.
And then eventually then that body of polluted consciousness, then that gets dissolved.
Yeah, that becomes dissolved. Yeah, the polluted consciousness becomes removed. The polluted the basis is I'm servant of Krishna. When that's understood and we act always on that platform, then it's it. So that's what we're trying to get to. The other things are techniques to help us get there. And so there is recommended techniques that the great personalities have used in the past to attain perfection. Right? That's why Puranas are so important. What's happening in Purana? We're just hearing some story, one day in the life of somebody. You know, where it's showing how they attain some kind of perfection. So Bhagavatam is about Krishna conscious perfection. You know, or what doesn't create Krishna conscious perfection. Right? Does that make sense? So in other words, the Vedic literature is always giving stories of those who regulated their life according to Shastra and obtained a benefit. So we can see, and in it, it wasn't just, you know, it wasn't something being given by, you know, the Boy Scouts or something here, that everything was just perfect. It wasn't some, you know, propaganda thing, you know, where the, you know, the pilots are flying along in their planes and singing a nice, you know, uplifting, fun song, you know, as they're dropping bombs on London. You know, it's like, you know, it's not one of those. This is that the reality of that they're going along and the problems they run into. Yudhishthira is following everything, but he ended up in the forest. But because Dharma is long term, he did get back, he was the emperor again. And those who are the bad guys, you know, lost. Right? That makes sense. So it works out. You know, but if you look at it too narrow, then you'll say, oh, he lost everything. That's how his wife looked at it. But he was looking at the bigger picture. No, we follow authority. So Dhritarashtra said it was okay. Of course, he didn't accept that gambling with Duryodhana was okay or with Shakuni. No, that was bogus. But because Dhritarashtra didn't complain, therefore he's working under authority. So he gets the benefit. He followed authority. But Dhritarashtra loses, you know, piety because he misused his position of authority. And Duryodhana and Shakuni, then they lose their position because they're you know, cheating. They're not following Dharma. And the other kings are supporting Duryodhana. So therefore, the whole assembly basically has a problem. Is that what okay, then footnote 49. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 7.12.10. Here is another important warning that a man must save himself from attraction to women. Until one is self-realized, fully independent of the illusory conception of the material body, the duality of man and woman must undoubtedly continue. The one who is actually self-realized, this distinction ceases, right? Because man and woman, what's the problem with it? That the body is masculine, the body is feminine, that's not the problem. Right? That they have their different natures, and again, that's not the problem. The problem is you think from that one can exploit that situation to gain one's own satisfaction. Right? So it's the sense gratification that's a problem. Right? So when we make that distinction, the illusory concept, because the masculine nature is not the body. It's not the body that's acting. Right? It's the Lord's potency and the involvement of the jiva and the super soul that makes it all look like it's happening. Oh, here's the man, here's the woman. But actually, it's the Lord's potency. So the soul is there, the pure soul. So therefore, it's that. Then it's a matter of what's the Krishna conscious situation. Does that make sense? So therefore, then those who are self-realized, they don't have any problem with the masculine and feminine principle. So neither do they have a problem in being detached, if that's the need, or functioning within Grihastha Ashram, right? The Pandavas, they're liberated souls. They have children. Why? Because there's a mechanics how you have children, right? They're Grihasthas. You're supposed to have children. They have children. But it's not because they're attached to the masculine and feminine principle. Does that make sense? Yes.
If there is no expectation, there is no problem.
If there's no expectations, there's no problem. Yes, if there's no but the expectations come from the...
Exploitation.
Yeah, no, if there's no exploitation, then there's no problem. But at the same time, is you can have no... Technically, you could, or let's say in theory, you can have no exploitation but still not be God-conscious. Right? The jnani, in theory, can be detached from the material energy, but ultimately he's not, because he wants to enjoy the Brahman platform. So he's giving up a lower taste, the external energy, for the taste of enjoying being situated in Brahman. You know, like the residents in Vrindavan are situated in Brahman. It's transcendental. Transcendental means Brahman. But they're not trying to enjoy Brahman. Right? They're serving Krishna, the person in Brahman. Right? So that's the meaning of Bhagavan realization, is you're focused on Bhagavan. Though you're situated in Brahman. You know? Technically, even the material energy is Brahman. It's all Brahman. But it's a matter of enjoying the situation. Right? It's not a matter of enjoying the situation. You know, if it's connected to Krishna, then it's not so nice, but it's connected. Like we have Kubja. She wants to enjoy the situation of being with Krishna. Like that. So it's not considered very elevated. So Krishna, you know, pleasantly interacts and then goes away. He doesn't become very close. Right? The queens of Dwarka, then it's for Krishna, but it's 50-50. So he's more intimate there and everything like that. But the intimacy is not the same as the gopis in Vrindavan, because that's 100%. There's no idea of anything for themselves from it. You know what I'm saying? The wife can expect 50%. That's her right. You know? But the gopis, that's why it's even more special. Because you have possession, and when there's possession, that ownership, then there's rights. But if there's no possession, where are your rights? So therefore that 100% surrender is there in that Parakya Rasa. That's why Braja Bhakti is pure unalloyed. Other is pure devotion, but it's pure unalloyed devotion. That's what makes Braj special. Right, so there is 100% surrender to Krishna. That's why he's 100% surrendered to them. So that's what makes the pastime so unique. Right. So the Parakya in this affords that surrender is there with no possession. That's something very special. The other, naturally, if you have possession, you're going to be surrendered. It's yours, so you take care of it nicely. But if you're taking care of it and it's not yours. So the point is that means the overall mood of Braj is Parakya. It's specifically there in the conjugal rasa. But he's from Mathura. His parents are Devaki and Vasudeva. He doesn't technically belong to Vrindavan. So the whole mood of everyone in Vrindavan is Krishna's not actually theirs. You know what I'm saying? He could go at any moment. So that means every moment they will be focused. If he's yours, then he's going to be sitting on the couch. Now he'll be sitting after a couple of hours. So if you talk to your friends and arrange a spa and, you know, do the other things you wanted to do, and then you'll pay some attention to your husband, you know, that's what you do. But that's because you have ownership. But the gopi, there's no ownership. So if Krishna's there, then they're taking full advantage. Full advantage meaning that service to Krishna. Does that make sense? It doesn't make the others any less. What we're bringing out here is the glory of Braj. Pure devotional service is the standard. Braja Bhakti is then an excellence above that. Does that make sense? Is that? Yeah. Okay. Okay. Okay, so then we'll have today is Friday, right? Yeah, so we'll continue on Monday, right? It's not Gaur Purnima. No, okay. So we'll continue from here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.